All right, good stuff now. Joining us, we have the president of the PGA of America, Derek Sprague, joins us. Derek, welcome into the golf shop.
How you doing, Mark and Mike?
Man, we're doing awesome. Got a compressed schedule coming up. Let's jump right into the PGA Championship. When we talk about Baltistrol, how are preparations going?
Going very well. The build-out is well underway with the corporate hospitality, and so they'll be obviously working right to the 11th hour with that, as they always do. But everything's going as planned and on schedule, and ticket sales are fantastic. And I think everybody's looking forward to a great PGA Championship this year in the New York metro market.
Well, and we have 20 club pros who qualified this year. Now, is that a big number? Is that a small number historically? And how have these guys generally fared? When was the last time a non-touring PGA pro made some noise in the PGA Championship?
Well, the 20 is the number that we've been using for the last several years, and even with our 20 PGA club professionals in the field, we still have the strongest field in major championship golf, which is great. And last year at Whistling Straits, Brian Gaffney from the Metropolitan PGA section made the cut. Finished, I think, right around the 50th place overall. So he had a great showing. I think he fired a nice 70 or 71 his final round. So competed very, very well at the highest level against the world's best.
Now, with the standard set of 20, and you mentioned it still leaves plenty of room for a top-notch field of touring pros. Do we ever get complaints that that's too many spots?
No, because I think the record shows that with the strongest field in golf, it's tough to argue with that. And the PGA of America was founded, in the PGA Championship by the PGA of America. So, that's part of our DNA. And, certainly over the years we've heard, some of the tour pros that are on the, outside that, 136 player field from the tour, because we have 20 of our club professionals in there. But again, that's who we are. It's a PGA Championship run by professionals for professionals, the only all professional field. So our 20 PGA professionals will be there for the unforeseen future.
Well, and the touring pros, many of them, if not all, owe a debt of gratitude to one or more PGA teaching professionals, right?
Absolutely. And, we were the first one to bring our major to $10 million prize purse. So, that says a lot for the PGA Championship. And the PGA Tour players certainly appreciate that nice paycheck.
when I asked you about the preparations, obviously in the Charlotte Greensboro area, we've got the 99th PGA Championship coming to Quail Hollow. When do y'all actually start getting involved with preparation for the golf course? We know that here at Quail Hollow, they kind of decided to tear a bunch of stuff up. So when do y'all start getting a little concerned that there's still grass to be grown out there?
Well, we have a great team. Kerry Higgs, our chief championships officer, does a great job in working with the host club. And, we make those decisions on sites about 6 to 7 years out, which gives us ample time. And we lay out a schedule. Okay, when are the changes going to take place? And Quail Hollow is a great club, and they've reassured us that everything would be done in plenty of time. So we're not concerned about that. It takes a good collaborative effort between the PGA of America and the host club, and a good timeline, and one that is comfortable, if you will, that's not aggressive, to make sure that if we do get some poor, growing weather or whatever, that we can still have time to get the course in tip-top shape.
Well, the good news is, for the most part, the back nine is going to be intact. The green mile is going to be there. What kind of excitement do you look for, when you start talking about finishing holes and selecting golf courses? I mean, you got to think that the finishing holes at Quail Hollow are going to be phenomenal.
They sure are. Again, to bring up Kerry's name, he is the best in the business when it comes to course setup, and one, he looks for a golf course that is just a great championship track that's very challenging, that will give the fans and the golfers, but more of the fans, a good change in the leaderboard, where it makes it exciting to either be there in person or watch it on television, because you just never know coming down the stretch. And certainly both Baltusrol Hall and Quail Hollow will lend itself to a great championship finish.
And when you come back into a town like Charlotte that has been hosting the Quail Hollow out there with Wells Fargo, do you lean on any of those folks, the people who held positions of leadership there, to help you get ready, or is it a fresh start for everyone?
No, we lean on certainly, you know, Quail Hollow has hosted tour events, so, you know, they're experienced in that regard. But we'll lean on the PGA professionals there to give some insight on how the course plays, and Carrier will do that, as he does in all his venues. He works with the PGA professional and, you know, certainly works with the agronomic team there as well to see if there's any mowing patterns that need to be adjusted for, you know, the strongest field in golf.
So how does a group as powerful and as really, you know, I don't know, I'd say interesting. I think the PGA of America is one of the most interesting organizations. How do you go about celebrating your centennial?
Well, you know, when we looked at Centennial, when we looked at other organizations in our planning phase a number of years ago, what it came down to is we said, you know, this is really about the PGA Club professional. And when you look back over the last 100 years and you look at the role that the PGA professional has played in the game of golf and the millions of people that they positively impacted to take up the game and to grow the game and to get to, you know, 25 million golfers in this country, you know, a lot of those people have been impacted by a PGA professional. So our theme this year is Thanks PGA Pro, where people can go to that website and thank their PGA professional. And it's fun to listen to those videos and to read those comments that people have left about their PGA professional, because not only are PGA professionals are great or the best in the business about teaching a person how to hit the ball straight or how to hit it far, but they're also great mentors in many respects. And it's just heartwarming to hear a lot of the great stories out there, how they've impacted the juniors or adults or whatever, and has made a real difference in their life, whether it's a veteran that's trying to get back into a normal life after serving our country and may have been disabled. PGA professionals are great about working with them as well. So we got so many great programs and have done such marvelous things over the last 100 years that this is a year to thank all those PGA professionals for the work that they do.
Again, we're speaking with the president of the PGA of America, Derek Sprague. And Derek, when we start talking about the abundance of teaching professionals that we have in this country, isn't it interesting how over probably even just, it might be more the last 5 years, but even the last 10 years, the metamorphosis that these professionals have had to go through in terms of how they teach with video coming into play and then things like TrackMan coming into play. It's got to be interesting to you and the rest of the staff in there, the PGA and all the professionals, how they've taken it from, you know, almost a PGA pro standing behind you watching you to now, I mean, frame by frame in HD video.
Yeah, again, you're exactly right. The advances in equipment, both on the playing side and on the teaching side, our PGA professionals, you know, we provide education to both our apprentices and to our members to stay on top of all this great technology that's come into play recently, as you mentioned, the last 10 years. And I think what's interesting is the players that we're seeing out on tour today, they grew up with this technology. So, I mean, they're like fine-tuned golfers from the day they're born almost with the technology that they have at their disposal to, you know, just create incredible club head speed and great swings to drive it consistently over 300 yards or to hit just great shots, you know, throughout their round. So, and our PGA professionals, like you said, have adapted to that, and many have been leaders in that regard of taking that technology and blending it with their great teaching skills to teach the best players in the world.
So there was never there's not a point at which the PGA of America feels threatened by the technology, that people will no longer, you know, seek out a human being to help them. I mean, there was a guy who once worked at the paint booth at GM who never thought he'd be replaced by a robot. So is there any threat to the technology maybe replacing the live in-person eyeballs?
No, not at all. In fact, a lot of these companies that offer technology have embraced PGA professionals because they know they're the best instructors in the world, and they've tapped into their knowledge of teaching for years pre-technology to see, hey, what kind of information are you looking for? So those companies have relied on PGA professionals to develop that technology, and they continue to enhance that technology. And of course, you know, you have the soft skills of a PGA professional that do a great job interpreting that technology for the best players in the world, or just even the average player in the world that's looking for, improvement in their game. So no, they're not threatened at all. In fact, it's just the opposite. These companies and these players are seeking out PGA professionals to learn more from them.
Well, and as golf has ebbed and flowed in popularity and rounds have gone up and down over the last decade with the financial situation in the country and things like that, where are we in terms of numbers of teaching pros out there? Has that stayed relatively stable? Did it drop? Is it on its way back? Where are we?
Yeah, no, we're relatively stable. We're at 28,000. We've been 28,000, right around that mark for the last several years. I've been on the board since 2008, and we've been at that mark at least since then, and probably a few years before then. So, we have a consistent number of PGA professionals, and then certainly the teaching professionals. As people find their desire or their specialty, we have a number of those 28,000 that are specializing in teaching. And I think, that's where the best players in the world are relying on PGA professionals, as well as new golfers coming in the game. And those that have been maybe playing for years have looked to the PGA professional as the best teachers in the game.
Derek, before we let you go, I want to talk a little Ryder Cup with you. and I hate to do this to you, but I'm going to throw it out there right now, because when you look at the guys that are currently qualified for the U.S. squad versus the guys that are currently on the list for the European squad, on paper, I mean, you've got some studs. They've got some rookies. I mean, on paper, it almost looks like, the U.S. squad's got to be the favorites right now. Are you guys going to relish maybe having that role, even though there's been a distinct European flavor to the winners recently?
Well, I mean, if you look at our record over the last 10 Ryder Cups, we're certainly not the favorites. And so I don't think any bookies are going to run to Las Vegas, with that in mind. But we've had a great, this Ryder Cup task force and now Ryder Cup committee, led by Davis Love, our captain for this year. We've put more work into preparing not only for 2016, but for many years to come with the Ryder Cup. And I feel pretty good right now, as long as our team stays healthy. We're 3 months away roughly to the Ryder Cup, so we got to make sure that none of our big stars get injured like that's happened in the past. So we need to just make sure we remain healthy and that we peak at the right time at the end of September. And I can tell you all the fans up in Minnesota are ready and raring for us to arrive there, and we're going to get all the Americans on our side this year, and our 13th man, so to speak, and that'll be fun to get America cheering for the Ryder Cup team this year.
All right, so on the off chance that the U.S. does not win, does it change how the task force kind of works going forward, or is this something that automatically was going to adjust as needed?
No, we'll be adjusting. If you play a poor round of golf, you'll reflect and you'll say, hey, what did we do wrong during that round, and what could we have done better? And I think, this is sort of new for us, this Ryder Cup committee and getting the team's involvement with that. And I think we'll take, whatever happens in Minnesota, even if we do win, we'll take, hey, what worked, and let's utilize that in France in 18, and what didn't work, and what can we do better? And, of course, when you have a domestic Ryder Cup versus a foreign Ryder Cup, there will be different variables involved there that we'll need to take into consideration. So, I think it's the main thing is that we're having a good dialogue with the tour players and the PGA of America representatives to make sure that we build a great program for years to come with the Ryder Cup.
Well, Derek, man, we really appreciate you coming on with us, and we look forward to a great summer and into fall of some great competition on the PGA of America side.
You bet. Thanks so much for what you're doing to help grow the game and keep the interest in the game. And we're looking forward to a great PGA championship at Baltusrol and then a Ryder Cup win in September.
Thanks a lot.
You bet.